Accession number 20785, Reel 3.
Robert Keenan, Reel 3.
Yeah. Your backside freezes. And while you're on the move, you can compensate for that because the gunner, the wireless operator, and perhaps the co-driver, you're not really needed. Your commander and driver are sufficient to keep the tank moving. You climb on the back of the Churchill, and it's flat, and the exhaust pipes are hot, and you stand on the exhaust pipes, and you stand there until your feet are burning, and you're freezing on the top, and your boots, your soles of your boots are red hot. But you got to get warm somehow. But that's the only heat you had. It's unbelievable. You stand on the back and you can feel the soles of your shoes getting red hot, but you're so cold on top, you put up with that. But I remember getting out this incident near Heinsberg. We stuck there from morning till, well, late in the afternoon, never moved. Standby and sitting in there. I came out of the tank, you the gunner, you pull yourself out and haul yourself onto the top and jumped off the tank, and your legs were so cold I hit the ground and you rolled over the ball. You got no feeling in your legs. You roll over and over and over, and you stump your feet and the pins and needles come back in your legs. What agony. But they were cold. But one of the things I remember about that area was coming down over the hill and coming down into the valley, and open fields covered with snow. And we came down, and as the tanks came down, the spray from the snow was coming behind them, and the steam of the snow coming over. And spectacular sight to see them coming over there. But if there'd been any German guns about, it'd been a lovely target. Yes, but there didn't seem to be a lot of opposition in that area. But then from Heinsberg we moved on towards Germany, into inner Germany, places like Kalkar, Cavalier, Capellen, places like that. Kalkar, that was the most. John Robb, Lieutenant John Robb was our commander there. You had a starting point. Now, this is coming up towards Nijmegen area, it must have been. Because when we were in Nijmegen, we spent the night in Nijmegen. We were built it in a schoolyard, a big school in the schoolyard, and all the tanks were in there. And one of the gunners had accidentally fired his gun, and the shell had somehow missed all the buildings. I remember this particularly in Nijmegen. It's just coming back to me. Because they put on a film show for us, and it was Mark Twain. And in the film Mark Twain, he's on the boat going up the Mississippi on one of the steamers, and the chap on the front of the boat throws the signing weight out, and he shouts, "Mark Twain, save water." Now, that was in Nijmegen. Now that sticks in my mind because we went back to Nijmegen about 10 years ago, wasn't it?
Who?
We went to Nijmegen.
I can't remember.
About 10 years ago, we went back to Nijmegen, went to the British Legion Club there, sat next to a Dutch girl, and I said to her, I was in Nijmegen 1945, I said, and there were tanks in a big schoolyard. She said, I was there. My father was caretaker in that school. It was a small world. Anyhow, we came from Nijmegen, that Nijmegen area, went up on this place Kalkar. The area had been flooded. We spent the night on the banks of this flooded area, and this sticks in my mind again, because then I had a lot of hair on top and I slept at the side of the tank, and when I woke up next morning the tank had crept down on its tracks and my hair was caught in the bogies and I couldn't get up. So I cut my hair away from the bogies. Anyhow, we moved up from there, went to the starting point. You know, in the actual action and everything in battles, you had a starting line. They actually put tapes across the road, like a road race, and that is your starting line. Being a tank, troop leader's tank, you were in the leading tank, and we were in the front. And we went to the starting line, 0 hour, off you go. Went up the road, turned right up this road. Lo and behold, we got round the corner and the ditch was full of German soldiers. They were as surprised as we were, and they scarpered on their hands and knees trying to get away up this ditch, and of course we were firing them as we went up. We got so far up, and there was a tree had been put down across the road further in front. And we pulled up near the Polish tree. One of the things I failed to do as a gunner was have what you call a clearance round. That's if you get a jam, round jams in your gun, you have a shortened cartridge which you put in to clear it. And I didn't have one on the tank, and the shell had jammed in the breech. Lieutenant Drob, he was in command then, he was on the top. At the same time, a tank behind us, a mortar bomb landed on the back of the tank, and I think it was either that, either a bullet or a splinter from the mortar went through his cheek and went through his chin to his mouth. But he was, you know, he wasn't mortally, he was seriously wounded, he was all right. We radioed back, and, you know, anybody got a... None of the other tanks had a clearance round, so I couldn't fire the main gun. There were Germans coming across the road from the other flank, and they were coming along this ditch, and they were firing the machine gun as much as they could at them. They were assembling in a farmhouse on the left flank, and the farmyard was full of Germans. I couldn't do anything about it. The main gun was jammed. We'll find the machine gun anyhow, as best I could. There was a pause then. There was nobody coming. I was looking through the telescope of the side gun. Ditch running up the side here, a little clearance in the wood. And this German soldier stepped out. And he was like one of these magazines. You see a German soldier with the helmet, the leather, the submachine gun, the metal canister with his respirator, jack boots. He stood there in front of the tank, and I was so astounded. I looked, and by the time the front gunner, the front machine gunner, he saw him. He couldn't do it. He was so startled to see that, and he stood and he looked at the tank like that. By this time, we got a clearance round, and I cleared the jammed round and loaded the gun up the tree, by the way. He looked at this tank, and saying, I gave a quick burst. I missed him. He stepped back. But I knew he'd been after a bazooka. There was somebody had discarded a bazooka, so fired a round into the ditch to... blow the bazooka up, so we're no good to him again. But I still see him. I see him regular, starting out of that ditch and looking up at that tank. He don't know how lucky he was.
Do you know the name of this place?
Pardon?
Do you know the name of this place?
The name of the place.
This was on the Kalkar, the road to Moyland. They came and They took Lieutenant Rob away to have his wound treated. Another tank came up, Bill Brown's tank actually, who you've already seen. Bill Brown took him back to have his wound addressed. Yes, that was Calcar. We moved back, then we got another tank commander took over from Lieutenant Rob. I think his name was Lieutenant Brooks, if I remember rightly. Not very popular with any of our troop.
Why not?
First of all, I had a disagreement with him. Somewhere he got an officer's sword, a long sword it was, and he wanted to put that in the turret of the tank. And I said, no, you can't do that. I said, you can't have that in the tank. It's going to be awkward. There's not a lot of room in the turret of a church in any case. Well, I put it at this. I said, if you put that on the side there and that breaks loose and I'm traversing that turret, that's going to interfere with the traverse of the turret and something's going to jam. But he was an officer and I couldn't argue with him. So he had this sword strapped, and I said, well, what's the idea of the sword? He said, well, if we have to bail out, that was if you had to abandon your tank, that would come in handy for hand-to-hand fighting. And, well, we all laughed about that anyhow, but he had his way. We had him with us, and we came to a place called, I think it was Cavalier, I think. Remember that Cavalier that was, it had been the typical German village. It had been, well, it had been shell and that. It wasn't really devastated. We pulled up at the side of the street, and I remember looking up, seeing this street lamp standing, and the Germans had their nameplate of the streets to be enamelled, blue and white enamelled, Adolf Hitlerstrasse. And I thought, my God, that would make a lovely souvenir, but of course you couldn't get out and do that sort of thing. Just then there was some shells came over and the tiles from the roof came off and fell down on the pavement. He didn't see many German civilians, most of them being evacuated. And then door opened, and out come this old German fella, and he starts to sweep the pavement. We were laughing our head off. I mean, there were shells shattered, and all these tires covered everything, trying to clear the road. So we'd been waiting there a while. We got whatever word came to advance, we went down the road, Lieutenant Brooke in charge. The thing he did then, which was, I don't think Lieutenant Rob would have done it, he rode branching off to the right, and the road, main road going straight down, turned off to the right in order the other two tanks to go down. Of course, when they got down, the outskirts, they were both hit by anti-tank guns. Ronnie Horn, he was in one of the tanks, Corporal Cooper got out. They carried a Bren gun, I remember that, and they carried a Bren gun, and his arms were broken, but he carried a Bren gun. Ronnie Horn, they'd been hit, and they got him out, and while they were carrying him away, they found an old door, they carried him on the door, and the door broke, and he fell off the door. I don't know if that had anything to do with his wounds, but poor Ronnie died in the hospital. And we always said the tank commander did the wrong thing. Tank leader's troops should have gone out first, and the other two should have been behind, but they were. Another incident before that, with the same tank commander, I should pause, it's an experience, but we came up this road towards the woods, and there was a high bank on the right-hand side. There was infantry down at the bottom, and this infantry sergeant came and he said, "Don't go over there." He said, "There's an anti-tank gun in the corner." He said, "He'll have you if you go up there." What? We got the driver right to advance. We went up. Oh dear, with a steep climb, we got over the top. Advanced a little way. I traversed the turret. I couldn't see anything in the corner of the woods, to be honest, because they used to conceal their guns so well. But traversing the turret, and as I came round, the German gun fired. And there was a crash and a bang and sheets of flame. Now, we'd been hit somewhere on the front. Bill Chitty, the driver, straight then, he yanked on the tiller bar, reversed. I traversed the turret to try and get round to the gun. And as I did that, there was a thud on the back of the turret. But, you could hear it, but it didn't harm us. We got back over and got down into the valley part again, and the infantry found it. I bloody well told you not to go up there. We got out, and we were very, very fortunate. The first shot had hit the track and had broken the snapped the track and the track pin, and that was hanging on by a couple of inches. If that had broken, we would have been stuck up there. When we turned round, the shell had hit the rear corner of the turret, the rounded corner, and it gouged. I mean, when you see an armour plate and hit by a shell, it's like it's like a sponge pudding, as if somebody's taken a spoonful out. Yeah. It hit the side. If it hit flush on, right behind my head, no mind. We got away with it.
Well, you're still here.
We got away with it. But Lieutenant Brooks, there was a lot of moaning and groaning about him. And the next thing I know, he was, I think he was transferred to another squadron. But I heard later on another incident with him. The troop he was with were advancing somewhere, and he gave the order to enemy aircraft, fire open fire at enemy aircraft. Well, you had nothing to open fire with, you only had to bring them. And he came to say, when it came up, it was a flock of geese coming down, flying overhead. But I don't know what happened to him, but yeah.
So this tank that you had damaged was Dettingen, was it?
Dettingen, yeah. Yeah. The advance continued then into Germany.
Did you get a new tank?
Oh, no. The tank was all right. You carried on. We put new track links in, and the dent in the turret, that didn't make any difference. No, you patched your tanks up if you could. Unless they got a real bashing, or, you know, they caught fire there. Bill Brown tank, that's still in Holland. That sank into the ground. It was left where it was, and that sank into the ground. It's still there today. He's been back in that area. Anyhow, we carried on into Germany. I don't think where we went next. So many things that you forget, and they recall them 5 minutes later. Came into we came up to the Rhine. must have been the next thing up to the Rhine crossing. I think the place was called Viet. I think it was on the banks of the Rhine. That was before the Rhine crossing. We stayed there a few days. Yes, we must have stayed there a few days because we had a squadron concert. We did a concert, which was very enjoyable. Yeah, I remember that place, Viet. We used to always joke about the poor gun we had on the Churchill tank compared to the German tanks. And there was a blacksmith shop there in Viet. And I always remember Jim Nixon, who was in the other tank, we used to carry, going into the blacksmith shop and saying we'd get some tube and then we would weld it on our guns to make them bigger. So everybody would have loved a big gun on a Churchill tank, which we didn't have. There was an American tank there, a huge thing as well. And we used to say, look at the size of that gun and look what we've got, pea shooters. While we were there, there was he used to always wander around and just do a bit of scrounging, seeing if anything any of use to you. And I came across this American tank, and it was abandoned in this field. And there was a farmhouse down in the valley in the distance. I looked around, no sign of anybody, no American crew, anything. Climbed onto this tank, got into the turret, and there was a huge compass. And I thought, my God, I looked at that compass. And I looked at it, and it was mounted, there were big bolts on the mountain, I didn't have any tools with me. And I thought, well, I'll go back to our tank, and I'll get a spanner, and I'll have that compass, that'd be a lovely souvenir. Went back to our tank, it was only 5 minutes up the road, came back, climbed into that turret with a spanner and the compass of God. Yet there wasn't a sign of anybody about. Somebody must have gone off for a spanner after I got it. Oh dear. Anyhow, when you looked around these American tanks, some of the gear, the equipment they had, I mean, there was one there in Viet at the back, had a first aid box, and there was morphine injections and everything. We didn't have anything like that.
You didn't have a first aid box?
Well, we had a little first aid with some bandages and a first aid dressing you carried in a uniform. But I used to often think if somebody was trapped in a tank and you're in agony, we had nothing. Nothing at all. We crossed the Rhine. That was an American thing, pontoon bridge. Remember that because we were still nailing the planks across as we went across pontoon bridge, you know, and thinking they wobble when you go over. Crossed the Rhine, we met up with the American paratroopers. By this time we had a new tank commander. They got rid of the other one. We were all hoping we would get John Robb back. But we got Lieutenant Brand, who'd been with the battalion, I think, since it was formed. He was an experienced officer. I mean, he'd been with the tank since they'd gone into the battalion. And we met up with the American paratroopers. They came on board. You got so many on each tank. We had a nice group with us, we were very friendly. I know they wanted two tins of sardines, if you had tins of sardines and olive oil. Oh, they loved them. So we did a bit of swapping. Give them a tin of sardines and we get something nice off their lot. Because basically the rations were tin puddings and sardine, tin cheese and tins of Spam. Enough to eat. He lived off the land, basically.
What could you get from the land?
Oh, rabbits, farmyards. You get geese and chickens, which been left behind. In fact, we went into one in Germany. When we went into Germany, it amazed me. Most of the houses had cellars, and the cellars were well stocked with big jars of, you know, fruit, peaches, pears. Went into one house and there was big sides of bacon. So from that time on, Dettingen had a side of bacon on the top turret, all covered over. And our breakfast every morning with a nice slice of bacon. Yes, that surprised me in Germany when we went in. Of course, it was farmland. I don't know, I suppose the cities were different. And we went on with the Americans. By this time, we were travelling mostly by road. We weren't going cross-country. We pulled up. We pulled up one night, I think. Stopped in a farmyard. Americans were amazed. American infantry. Because when we first met up with them that night, they all sort of dug their slit trenches and everything, as infantrymen do. And so, well, when are you going off, boys? And we said, what do you mean going off? Going off where? They said, well, don't you pull them back? Apparently in the American army, the tanks at night time, they pull back from the infantry and leave the infantry by themselves. And we didn't do that. We stayed up at top. We stayed with them. And that surprised them. We thought it was a good idea, actually. We go back at night time and leave them there. But there you are. The British Army's different. No, thank goodness. We moved on that night. Something happened then, which is something I'll never forget again. We're going down this road, lines of tanks. Very close. We were too close, actually. We halted. The officers were called up to an O group. It's called an officers group where they all confer. So Lieutenant Rob went up. Not Lieutenant Rob. Lieutenant Brand went off. Off he went to the O group. All the tanks here, there was our tank here, our two other troop behind us. Front of us was an American tank destroyer. Obviously the big tank destroyer with a big 17-pounder gun. They all went off. When the tank commander went, I meant the gunner, I was a gunner, I could come out and sit on top of the turret. I'm sitting on top of the turret, and I looked over to the left flank. There was a field, the ground rising up there. Just inside this hedge, there was an armoured vehicle. And I looked at it, and I thought, I don't like the look of that. So I traversed the turret round. I traversed round. The telescopes we had weren't very powerful, sight telescope. Couldn't make out what it was. See figures, men handing stuff up to the top of this tank. I couldn't make up where it was. So anyhow, I went to the, I think it was the Americans behind. I think I was a sergeant on there. I said to the son, I said, can you make out what that tank is on the left there? And he looked, and he said, no. I said, well, wouldn't it be a good idea to send a couple of men up, you know, and have a look at it, see what it is. I don't like the look of it. And anyhow, they didn't bother. They just sat there. They were sitting on the side of the tank. So I went to this tank destroyer in front of us. It was a British crew. So I said to him, I said, can you, you've got a better telescope sighting than we have. Can you have a look at that and see what it is? So he just thought, oh, no, that's all right. It's one of ours. Well, I wasn't happy about it at all. I couldn't do much about it. I mean, if I had said, well, you know, I'm going to take a shot at it, and if it's a British one, hard lines, if it's a German,